Hello, and welcome to The Impact Code, your go-to podcast for stories of transformation, inspiration, and impact. I'm your host, Brett Hollenbeck, a seeker and storyteller dedicated to bringing you conversations that illuminate the path to personal growth and collective change. Each episode, we dive deep into the lives of innovators, thinkers, and doers who are breaking boundaries and making their difference in the world. Today's episode is brought to you by Tower Community Bank. As a dedicated partner in progress, Tower Community Bank is not just a financial institution. We are a cornerstone in fostering growth and development within our communities. With a commitment to personal service and supporting local initiatives, we help turn dreams into reality for individuals and businesses alike. If you enjoyed today's show, you can show support by heading over to www.towercommunitybank.com and checking us out. Big thanks to Tower Community Bank for their support in making this episode possible and for their ongoing commitment to community and empowerment. So sit back, tune in, and get ready to be inspired by today's amazing conversation with Kate Cavanaugh. Hello, and welcome to another exciting episode of The Impact Code, where we dive into the stories of extraordinary individuals transforming lives. Today, I'm thrilled to introduce a trailblazer in the realm of regenerative agriculture and many other things, Kate Cavanaugh. Kate is an entrepreneur and advocate for regenerative agriculture, known for co-owning and operating Western Daughters Butcher Shop in Denver, Colorado. Alongside her partner, Josh, she focuses on selling fresh, local, grass-fed, and pasture-raised meats. These meats are sourced from within 150 miles of Denver, emphasizing her commitment to local agriculture and sustainable practices. Kate's journey to her current role is quite intriguing. She was a vegetarian for a significant period before reintroducing meat into her diet, choosing to consume meat from sustainable, humane sources. This personal experience with vegetarianism and her eventful shift towards meat consumption, particularly sustainable meat, has played a crucial role in shaping her business philosophy and practices. Her business, Western Daughters Butcher Shop, is more than just a meat shop. It's a testament to her dedication to regenerative agriculture. She works closely with regenerative ranchers and farmers, fostering deep connections and positively impacting the land. This venture reflects her broader commitment to environmental sustainability and her understanding of the interplay between agriculture, nutrition, and mental health. Additionally, Kate is also the host of Mind, Body, and Soil podcast. In this platform, she explores a variety of topics, including farming, grief, biohacking, regenerative agriculture, spirituality, nutrition, and more, showcasing her diverse interests and expertise. It's also worth noting that Kate's approach to business and agriculture is not just about providing food. It's also about education and advocacy. She seeks to inform the public about the benefits of regenerative agriculture and sustainable meat consumption, both for personal health and environmental sustainability. Please join me in welcoming Kate Cavanaugh to The Impact Code. Kate, welcome to the show.
Oh, Brett, it's a pleasure to be here. And I'm going to have you write all of my bios from here on out. That was fantastic.
I got you. Anytime, anytime. I'll send it over. Okay. It is so good to have you on the show today. I appreciate the time. And I'm excited to just see where our conversation goes, because I think there's a variety of things that we could talk about today.
I agree.
I'm just going to start with one and we're going to see where this thing goes. All right. Perfect. So I'm really interested to find out what experiences sort of sparked your interest in regenerative agriculture.
I think that there was a sort of building experience. And I think that with anything in our lives, it's really interesting to try to find that sort of superhero origin story. I think it's something that interests all of us right now. And I think that there were multiple little data points that led me into being interested in regenerative agriculture. And I think the first one is, like a lot of us as kids, I just didn't feel like I had a place. And so that idea of place became really interesting to me at a young age, because I didn't feel like I fit in. I didn't feel like I had my own place where I was comfortable. And I think that led down a little bit of a rabbit hole. And it led me to becoming a vegetarian at a very young age, which really got me interested in where things come from. And I think that my interest in regenerative agriculture was born out of those two places of I want to explore place and where things come from, where they originate from. And when I started down the regenerative agriculture rabbit hole, it wasn't even called regenerative agriculture. This is 15, 17 years ago now, and it was a very different place. I just wanted to know, where did food come from? And was there a space where food and land management practices and agriculture could support one another, where food could be a byproduct of conservation, where it could be healing landscapes and impacting them in a positive way, as opposed to a negative way? And I just sort of kept being fascinated by that and followed that rabbit all the way to becoming a butcher.
Yeah, that's it's a long trail, I'm sure. And one of the things that's really interesting, so personally, I have a six-year-old daughter, and she has just started asking these questions, right? She notices, right, when she's like, oh, I'm eating a chicken nugget. She's like, does that like a chicken? And so we've started having some of these conversations, and there's a lot of parallels that I see in sort of how she's thinking and the journey that you just described yourself having gone on. What was your support system like when you were going through these things? Did you have a good support system to sort of help you process these things? Or was it something that you sort of figured out on your own as you went along?
As a kid, you mean?
Yeah, as a kid.
No, I did not have a good support system to process these things. I think I had... what I had at home was a mirror for what I was exploring through some of these topics, which I saw a lot of death at home. I saw a lot of grief at home, and I was putting that back onto the outside world and wondering how I could control these aspects of death and grief that I was experiencing so much. And that moved vegetarianism was that initial aspect of, I am experiencing such heaviness in the world, and how can I remove myself from that in a way by becoming a vegetarian? And so I think what was happening at home was very much influencing a lot of this trajectory, and it was really without support. And one of the things that I think is the most beautiful about childhood, and something that we kind of talked about at the beginning before we hit record, is that series of questions of why, where does this come from? And those just continuing to wanting to understand those foundational aspects of our world. And so I think it's fantastic that your daughter has a support system, but I didn't. And there was a bit of a mirror there.
Yeah. And I think by, obviously I'm not perfect, right? There's things that I don't understand, but I think the interesting thing is it re-sparks the curiosity within me as well. Because when she's asking these questions, like, because she's heard, I think, through me and through other sources of some of the sort of mass agriculture, some of the issues that exist in that world, and some of the things that she finds probably unethical or upsetting. And so it's been an interesting experience for me to sort of reopen that curiosity, because over time, I think there were some things in the world for me that I started to just accept as they were. Like, that's just the way it is. And the beautiful thing I think about childhood that you just talked about is that that feeling doesn't really exist.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That feeling of.
Yeah, that feeling of like being certain about how things are and that they're just that way. It doesn't exist.
Yeah, and your curiosity is driving everything, and nobody has dampened that curiosity yet. And so it is so deeply alive and wanting to follow it all the way. And one of my favorite things is, I don't have children, but when children ask, well, why? Well, well, why that? And then why that? And they're trying to get to this sort of core nugget. And that is a beautiful thing.
Yeah, it's beautiful. And it's a great reminder for me every time she does that. That's like, when I'm hearing information, I should be asking that. I should be asking why. Mm-hmm. I don't think we should ever accept things at face value, but it's easy to do.
And I try to cultivate that within myself all the time, and to allow myself to go down those rabbit holes, to allow myself to ask why, because I think that while that curiosity may be dampened, whether it's in the way that our educational system works or the way that we were parented, or, you know, it's very multifactorial, but I think that it is still there and waiting for us if we give it a space to come through and feed it with the information it's looking for.
Yeah, I agree with you. What have you done to be able to keep that alive? And you talked about having a mirror. You talked about maybe not having a space always to have those questions safely asked. So how did you keep that curiosity alive over time?
I don't know how I kept it alive in childhood. I think I was naturally really curious, and it was definitely dampened in the process of both my school and my home life. But I think that in some ways it was that fire was so strong that there was a really nice bed of coals. And I left high school early to go to college, and that acted like kindling. And I was really lost in college. I wanted to do a little bit of everything. And I think a lot about generalists. David Epstein wrote a book called Range about generalists and having interests in a lot of different spaces and the way that those spaces might intersect. And so I spent some of college just chasing rabbits. And I think that became a sort of modus operandi for me to continue to look at whatever it was that I was interested in and to ask those questions and read books on those topics and to seek out experts to talk to. And the podcast is very much a natural extension of wanting to have these conversations and feeling so incredibly lucky to get to talk to experts in the fields that I'm suddenly really interested in. And so I think that when we feed it, when we say, okay, well, let's get curious about XYZ and let's find a book, let's find a conversation, that those things only become, I think we only ask more whys and we only seek out more, I want to say answers, because I think that answers is a more concrete thing than what it is that I'm seeking. But we seek out more of that information, more of those trails of curiosity.
Yeah. I completely agree with you. And the podcast has been such a great source of feeding that curiosity for me, of finding, like you said, and I think for me, it ends up being like a next question.
It's yeah. Like
I have a question or something that I'm interested in diving into. And then when I'm able to talk to an expert, the more that I get the quote unquote answer to the first thing, the next question appears. And I'm like, okay, now that I have a little more familiarity with that, I see that I actually don't know much about all of this. So like, let's dive in a little deeper. And it becomes this cycle that's really beautiful to feed. And I think you can do that just in everyday life, just in having conversations with people too.
Really Me too. Beautiful. Having conversations, reading books, listening to podcasts, and having that sort of bifurcating path. And I say that all the time, that every guest that I have on the podcast changes the trajectory of the podcast itself, because they introduce a concept that I suddenly become really interested in. And I follow that and find another guest, another expert. And that same thing begins to happen. And that's how we grow this sort of branching, wide-ranging tree of interest and curiosity.
Yeah. When did you start the podcast?
2 years ago, almost 2 years ago to the month.
Okay, perfect. What was the moment that you were like, I have to do a podcast?
Honestly, it was probably 7 years ago. So I had been listening to podcasts pretty intensely. It was where I enjoyed hearing conversations about those topics that I was interested in and sort of furthering my knowledge base. And at the time, I was actually quite sick and didn't really have the energy to create one myself, but it became what I was working towards, what I was healing towards in many ways, was getting to do this myself. And so it had been building in me for quite a while before it was launched.
That's really beautiful. And so as you have started the podcast, you're exploring these sort of varied focuses, expanding the tree and all the branches that you're talking about. Do you feel like, how have you changed as a person?
Oh, that's a good question, because I think I've changed immensely. One of the things I say about the podcast these days is that it's about the threads of what it is to be humans woven into this earth. And I think that each guest has changed my entire life. I think that these small impacts, as we become part of an ecosystem, both literally, and this has deepened my relationship to place, to the place that I'm in, to the way that I move throughout my ecosystem that is all of the nature that surrounds me that I am connected to and a part of. I am nature, but also the ecosystem of my community and the fabric of a sort of larger community that I'm exploring. And I think that each guest tweaks something that can't be untweaked, and finds me deeper embedded in the fabric and more aware of what's going on around me. And I think even more curious than I was before, but it's also changed the way that I view the world in a way that I think anytime, you know, like our lens on the world, and this is, we are experience machines. We are story making machines. We are meaning making machines. And so our view of the world, then that what it mirrors back to us becomes different, and what we see and how we see things. And so I think that I am a vastly different person. It's hard to quantify in some ways, but there is a very felt sense of just how much has changed throughout the course of these conversations, which is beautiful. I mean, it's beautiful that I think 71 conversations can radically change a single person.
Yeah, I can't imagine anyone ever saying that better than you just did. I think that was a beautiful way to say that. And I completely agree. I think there's something irreversible that happens in the space that is created by podcasts. And it mm-hmm. really interests me to trying to bring this idea of what is it about a podcast mm-hmm. space that makes it safe enough to produce conversations mm-hmm. that have that result, and then applying that in the real world. That's something I'm really fascinated, like with my friends, with acquaintances, with people that I'm meeting out for coffee or for lunch or whatever, like all of those, like if we could start to build that type of result mm-hmm. into like every interaction,
I think the results that. Would
be, yeah, it'd be pretty amazing.
I've thought about this a lot, and I think that we are storytelling creatures, and I think that is a fundamental part of what makes us human. And we evolved in oral tradition. The written word is much newer than just this conversation that you and I are having, and the ability to give somebody a space to tell stories, to tell their story, or to tell the story of something that they're interested in, of, you know, some recent guests like phosphorus or the ocean or of dust. And I think that we have a yearning as a species. We have become so deeply isolated from the village that we would have had in our evolutionary past, where there would have been these bands of humans in which there was a lot of different conversations and a lot of different storytelling around a fire at night or in the early hours, you know, as you kept warm with one another, the stories that you might have told. And so I think that there's a deep yearning for that. And I think that we've created a space where conversation feels really difficult. And I think that some of the incredible technologies that facilitate like this conversation between you and I in two different places have given us both that opportunity and have disrupted some of that natural fabric of a community in which you are exploring conversations that might surprise you with neighbors or just within your town, within your city, in a coffee shop, you know, just meeting people on the street. And so I think we're really hungry for that. And I think that podcasts have come in and drawn in listeners as a part of the conversation and also templated what it might be to go and have that conversation in real time and to continue that oral tradition of storytelling that makes us, in many ways, I think story makes us human.
Yeah, it does. And I think part for me of what makes the podcast space different is just the intention behind it. I think it's easy for me to, with people, and this is just my personal experience, but with people that I see on a frequent basis, it's easy to get in a pattern of not having intentional conversations where curiosity is a part of that. So kind of bringing this full circle, I think entering those conversations with an intention of curiosity, of learning, of finding new information, I think changes the dynamic of the conversation. And the intention may even just be like creating the space. It may just be having the conversation, because I think it's easy just to let those things happen when they happen instead of saying, hey, I need to talk to this person and ask them about this.
Yeah. And I think that natural inquiry helps too. I recently had a conversation about small talk, and somebody was talking about how much they disliked small talk and they felt that that was all that they had. And I think that when you go in with the intention of getting curious about somebody, I'm always surprised at how deep, how quick people are willing to go, because I think we're all ready to get underneath that surface layer and to find some depth. And even if that line of inquiry, that curiosity is just about the other person, and being an interviewer, I've seen and sometimes practice, this sounds horrible, sometimes practice when I'm out in the world, when I'm at a party, when I'm with a group of people, in how to invite, how to create that container where somebody then comes in and feels comfortable filling that container with their story.
What have you found as you're exploring this and learning yourself? What have you found that has worked to help create those spaces? Because this is something I'm really fascinated with right now as well.
Yeah, I think that there are a couple of things. I think that often we are not listening to those pieces that people are putting forward and then asking a question about them. And so I try to be very intentional about the way that I listen to the way somebody shares a tidbit about themselves. And hopefully, I hope that I can see that nugget that they want to be seen. I think we all really want to be seen. And I think that if we begin to look for the ways in which people are presenting themselves to be seen by us, we can then latch on to that thread and begin to tug on it a little bit. And I find that even just one question oftentimes will yield this sort of landslide of information that maybe hasn't been touched in a while. And I also try to see it, you know, with people I know and in remembering the experiences that they've had and trying to do some of the same distillation that I hope that I do on the podcast of asking them pointedly where they're feeling with this and X and Y and Z in their lives coming together and giving them that opportunity. And so I think in a lot of ways, it is just opportunity. Are we being good listeners? And then are we asking questions that allow people to share their inner terrain with us?
I do love that. That's the great advice.
Does that resonate with you as an interviewer? What do you think?
It does. For me, I really resonated with what you said about trying to find the nugget that someone is maybe they're not comfortable saying it outright, but there's like just that thing that they throw just a little bit out there. And I think sometimes having the courage to step into that can be scary for me, because it can lead to somewhere where maybe I feel out of control. But then I find that the best conversations that I have and the most meaningful ones to me personally are the ones where I see that and I step into it. And I think partly for me too, I'm very empathetic and I don't want to put someone else on the spot. So there's times when I'm like,
always,
that may be too big to ask or that, but I think not giving someone the chance to share and making that decision for them robs both parties of the chance to maybe experience something that's really meaningful.
Yeah. And to have that shared moment of vulnerability, I feel the same way that you do in that as an empathetic person. And I am also a very private person. And so I'll want to extend that. And often I'll just attach a little bit like, may I ask? And then, please don't feel like you need to you need to share, just to create that easy exit that I would so appreciate if somebody else gave to me. And I think even that itself is communicating a sense of safety, that there is an exit door for those of us that really need that exit door, and also a good container, especially as people that are empathetic.
Yeah, I love that. I like the kind of giving the disclaimer of like, hey, if this isn't something you want to answer, feel free to pass, but I'm curious.
I think
that's a great way to set that up with people. As you are having conversations like this with people out in the world, is there something that you found yourself focusing on lately? I know you have a very broad sense of things that you're interested in. And so I'm curious, is there something that's coming up for you a lot right now in conversations?
You know, it's funny, I kind of started with it and I actually hadn't considered it through this lens, but I've been very interested in where things originate and where they end. And so I've been, at least on the podcast, I've been exploring supply chains, though I will absolutely rope anybody who will talk with me into discussing them as well. And I think that really early interest in place and where things originate from, and then chasing that down through agriculture, really created a deep curiosity about where everything comes from, because this started about where does my food come from? And who is involved? Who are the hands that touch my food? And how does it make its way from place, from soil to table? And I spent 17 years exploring that. And then all of a sudden, all these other doors opened up that are deeply connected to food. Oftentimes, I think everything is pretty deeply interconnected. But then to begin to explore where everything came from. And so I've been chasing down a lot of interest in supply chains and distribution chains on the podcast and within my own personal reading, and then making anybody who will talk to me about them talked about them.
I love that. I love that. And I hinted at this earlier, but it's so interesting because I think the terms can come to mean different things to different people, right? And one of the things that I learned quite a bit about in grad school, because our school was well known, University of Tennessee in Knoxville was well known for their supply chain school as a part of their business school. Mm-hmm. And they're just world-class at it. And so I'm curious, like when you're thinking about supply chain, what is it that you're pulling out of these conversations right now? Or what has you fascinated? I think you mentioned place, but what is it that you're specifically zooming in on in regards to placing these conversations that has you fascinated?
I think I have this idea that we as humans are made out of place. And I think that it's really easy to start in those hunter-gatherer bands that we mentioned earlier when we were talking about story, because what we did is that there were resources that we as humans needed to live, to thrive in the world. And we would move our bodies to those resources. And our bodies in turn became made out of those places. When I eat, you know, I run a really small farm here in upstate New York. And so when I eat a goat that I've raised on this little plot of land that I tend, all the minerals that were in the soil, all the sunshine that goat received, that then becomes a part of me, right? It crosses a one cell wall thick barrier in my intestinal lining, and it literally becomes me. It's a very intimate relationship. And I think that this has been true for all of human history. We are made out of place in this way. We are also made out of place in the interaction of the clothes that we wear that might have at some point been made from the animals that we hunted or that we tended. You know, we inhale smoke from the tinder that we are collecting, that maybe actually what drives us as a hunter-gatherer band is our our search for fuel, actually. It's not necessarily food, it's fuel. And we also inhale oxygen that plants are exhaling, and they take in our carbon dioxide. So not only are we made out of place, but there is also a sort of reciprocal exchange that is happening between us and our environment. I'm looking at my house plants right now. I'm thinking about the ways that we have become made out of one another in this sort of grand experiment. But I think that we are in a very different place as humans than that original place that we evolved in. And we are now made out of places far and wide, right? And we clothe ourselves and equip ourselves with technology, with materials that all had an origin point. And I think it's really interesting, especially as somebody who has been so interested in the origin point of my food. Oh, what farm did this come from? What practices did they have? And even just what is that entire process like to explore that? I mean, this cotton that's in this shirt came from somewhere, and so did the dye. And there were hands that grew the plants that made the dye and grew the cotton and processed the cotton. And then there were hands that were a part of shipping it, you know, from wherever it came from across the ocean and in an industry that is very hard for me to see. And so I think a lot of this is about seeing what is unseen. Even in our computers, right? There's cobalt, there's all these different metals that came from somewhere. There's sand in the glass, there's sand in the silicon chip. And that came from somewhere, and it had a whole journey before it made it here to me. And I want to better see and understand that journey, which is what brought me into supply chains and every little aspect of them, from sort of mining to processing to shipping and distribution, and seeing some of the people and places and ecosystems that are impacted in that way, because I am now made out of places. If I eat some blueberries from the grocery store, maybe they came from Chile, and so we are now made out of places, every place in many ways, and wanting to explore what it now means to be human, which is we move resources to us instead of going out to those resources.
So as you're exploring this, and I think this is really fascinating, because like I said, I took a lot of classes on supply chain, but I hadn't thought of supply chain in this specific context, which is the broader context of how everything in the world has an interconnectedness. Mm-hmm. So if you don't mind sharing, how has this tangibly like changed the things that you're doing on a day-to-day basis as you're sort of learning? And I know you're probably still in process on this too, because you're still having conversations actively.
Yeah, I am. And I think that one of the things that I think is difficult about looking at this is its largesse. That when we begin to consider all of the different places that make up, you know, I'm drinking water out of a glass, the sand came from somewhere, the shirt, everything, it is so big that it is unfathomable, and it is completely overwhelming. And I actually think that one of the reasons that we feel more connected to our food system is, number one, it's very intimate. You know, we talked about it, it quite literally becomes us. But number two, I think it is one of the last spaces that we feel like we can have a sense of agency or control over in knowing where our food comes from, because we are so trapped in this big web of interconnected supply chains that it is very difficult to know where, for example, your shoes came from, or to know all the places that touched your cell phone before it made it to your pocket. And so I think my initial response to this has been to allow myself to become incredibly overwhelmed by it, and to feel its largesse, and to understand that its largesse is maybe something that my human mind cannot really comprehend. And when we begin to talk about things like this, I'm always interested in the way that people will try to make the very big, very tangible. And so an example is that, you know, all of the concrete that we use in a year over the world is enough to build an 88-foot wall, 88 feet high and 88 feet wide around the equator.
Wow.
And so this is an attempt to explain how much that's sand.
Yeah. I'm trying to picture that.
You can't, right? But yeah. that is our attempt to make it more tangible. But these are what the philosopher Timothy Morton would call hyper objects, which are things that are so large in relationship to what it is to be human that they are almost unfathomable. And so that would include all the concrete in the world or all the plastic ever created. And so I've just let myself be overwhelmed by it and to allow that to kind of wash over me and to then start to make some considerations, I think, especially for how I treat the goods in my life. Because one of the facts that you have to accept in looking at some of this is I suppose I could. I'm not going to go live in the woods and go back to the Stone Age. Mm-hmm. And so it does establish a different ritual of care for everything in my life, because I know that it has had a long journey before it came here to me.
Yeah. So the overwhelm thing has me really curious, because I think in the past, I'm just sort of relaying this to my own life. When I've been overwhelmed by something, my tendency is sometimes to pull away and focus on something else.
Mm-hmm. That's probably very smart.
Do you feel that though? Like, do you feel that impulse to just be like, this is a lot?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, how do you continue to explore something that is so massively like overwhelming with the amount of data and information?
I think that this is a really natural response. And I actually think that a lot of what we see in our world in terms of escapism or in terms of vices that numb are actually to escape this feeling of overwhelm that we feel at largesse. And that largesse could just be the amount of information that you get in your phone in a single day from news, from social media, from all of these different things. Or news is a great example. This 24-hour news cycle and just how overwhelming that can feel, or the amount of overwhelm we have at the amount of options for what we could watch on any given night on a streaming platform, right? We are in, and I hadn't thought about it until now, in many ways, I think we are in an age of overwhelm. And so I think that we all have these vices, these ways in which we look to escape that overwhelm. And I think they look very different. They can be substances. They can be Netflix, right? It's just a way of turning off of numbing. And so I think that it is a natural and healthy response to ask yourself how you can turn down the noise of what it is to live in, and I'm going to put this in big quotes, modernity, and this point in civilization, because it is more everything than it ever has been. And I think that I'm really lucky in a lot of ways to live a life that feels quiet in other ways. And there are other ways in which I choose not to overwhelm myself. Oftentimes when I am sort of doing these deep dives, I kind of turn off the news and I just allow this to be a source of overwhelm as opposed to partaking in other things. And so it's about turning other dials down a little bit while I allow this to be turned up and finding a sense of, you know, whatever modicum of peace we can find. I know for me, I usually walk somewhere between 4 and 8 miles a day. And that's a part of where I find a sense of whatever, of quietness, of moving meditation to allow me to sort of process and let some of that overwhelm go through me. Though sometimes it gets caught and I just get overwhelmed.
Yeah. I think it'd be impossible not to. I just, with the amount, like you said, of all the things that you said, I think several resonated with me. Like just the simple one of like Netflix.
Yeah.
There's times when if I don't watch a show that I've seen 10 times in a row and I just, you know, I just put it on repeat and half pay attention, I'll spend 45 minutes looking for a show and then I'll end up going back to the same show and just watching it again anyways.
Yeah.
Because it just,
it's soothing.
For me, it is. I have those shows.
Soothing.
Absolutely. And there's something cathartic about, I think, finding there's a stillness to it where it becomes something where new information isn't required. And so that lets me have calm. And I think
it's predictable.
Yeah. It doesn't require 100% of my focus, but I can focus, right? Mm-hmm. I think there's the opportunity to choose whether to focus or not, whether I want to focus or whether I want to just kind of relax and tune out a little bit. That is really fascinating. And I think for me, the other thing that has really become obvious in my life is the most, I think, fulfillment for me comes from sort of the opposite side of that coin, which is sort of creating. And creating doesn't always, to me, have to mean like writing something down. It could be having a conversation like we're having right now. It could be having dinner with a friend, making dinner with a friend.
Yeah.
Could be making music. There's so many things I think that we all have in our life that are these outlets where we can find the joy of creating versus consuming. And for me, that shifts my mindset then from a place of like overwhelm to more of, I almost wanted to say abundance, but I don't think that's the right word. More of enough, just enough.
Yeah.
Right.
No, where I love feel that. Like,
yeah. When I'm creating, there's this sense of like, this is enough, right? This is good. This is peaceful. This is satisfying. This is fulfilling for me. And so that has been my focus this year is like, where are the things that I'm just consuming? And how do I shift that into something where maybe it's something I remove or maybe it's something that I modify into something where I can produce more or create more and not for the reason of like, I have to do something to be valuable, but just because there's an inherent fulfillment for me that comes from making something.
I love that you brought creation into this because I think that you hit on maybe the most important thing, right? It is to allow that creativity to bubble up and to bubble out in whatever way and not for any reason, but just because it's there. And I think that's really beautiful. So thank you for bringing that into the conversation.
Yeah. Thank you for your thoughts as well. I really do find this whole subject so fascinating because I think it hits home for so many people. I don't know a single person who would tell me they're not overwhelmed right now. I don't think.
Absolutely not. I can't think of a single person I know that isn't overwhelmed. And I think that is our status quo. And right. I think that is worth some curiosity. Why are we so overwhelmed? And what might alleviate that overwhelm or at least act as palliative care for that overwhelm, you know, whatever that is. and I think it's a really interesting question in this space of more, what is, you said a really beautiful word in that, which is enough to just have something be enough. And I think it is worth seeking those places where you can find joy, where you can find enough, where you can find sort of alleviating that. I know I find it out in the woods, out on a walk, out in a different space. And also when I'm creating, when I'm having conversation, it is actually one of my favorite places to create.
I think that's so beautiful. That reminds me of that. I cannot remember for the life of me. You may know who said this. I cannot remember for the life of me at the moment. I'll put it in the show notes if I remember. But there's this idea, like I grew up in, especially in the podcast world, like I was heavy into podcasts and I still am, but for a long time, like anywhere I was going, anything I was doing, there was always a podcast on just because it was a great way for me to learn and absorb information. And for a while there was this idea that circulated that I don't think is inaccurate. I think it is accurate, which is this idea that the opposite of scarcity is abundance. And I think there is a valid place for that. And a lot of people were talking about how can I have an abundance mindset? Mm-hmm. And I think for me, that became this thing that I became obsessed with though, which was like, there's always more, there's always better, there's always greater. And for me, that became unhealthy to the point where I wasn't able to enjoy what I had in front of me because I was always thinking about what else there might be out there. Mm-hmm. And so a beautiful thing happened in my life when I heard that quote that I was describing earlier, which is the opposite of abundant or of scarcity is not abundance. It is enough. Mm. And I was like, ooh, that one hit for me.
Yeah. I mean, your word hit for me when you pulled out the word enough, it felt really beautiful. It felt really simple and it didn't feel like abundance, which I think comes with a lot of that drive for more, that there could be more instead of the sort of gratitude with what is here right now. I think enough and now have a lot of things in common for me, right? We're always thinking about where we've been and where we're going, and abundance is the more that we could have, and scarcity is the stuff we didn't have and it's back there. But now and enough are about just dropping in to right here. And I do think that in many ways, some of that overwhelm pushes us in those directions of either seeking or ruminating. And I think that there is a reaction too. And I'm always interested in where these manifest. There are reactions to the way that mother culture has been whispering in our ear. And then you get this sort of movement of abundance mindset, which I've absolutely heard in all of these different places over the years. And that is sort of a reactivity to something. It is a response to something. And so I'm probably going to leave this podcast curious where that sort of originated from, where that came from. But I love enough. I love enough. I think that is a really beautiful thing. I'm actually going to take that. I'm going to take that with me.
Yeah, me too. Honestly, I hadn't thought of it in that way. And the other thing that you just connected for me that I find really fascinating is comparing abundance and scarcity to almost like past and present. Mm-hmm. So it's like you're talking then about tense and you're talking about like abundance being looking towards the future, what I lack, what is still out there. Mm-hmm. And then scarcity being like what I don't have. So it's almost like this idea of looking backwards. And I hadn't thought of it in kind of the temporal context, which is really, really interesting too. So I'm going to be nerding out on that as well.
Yeah. I love it. I think we both have some fun takeaways.
Yeah, absolutely. Kate, one of the things I'm curious if connects to this idea of enough would be the farm. So, because there are all ranges of farms. And transparently, I grew up on a, I'd say like a mid-sized farm in Indiana.
Interesting. What kind of farm?
So we had cattle, beef cattle specifically. Yeah. We had corn, soybeans, hay, straw. Some years we would do winter wheat. So it's pretty decent sized farm in Indiana. In Tennessee, people would tell me it's a huge farm. In Indiana, the farms tend to get a little bigger than Tennessee. There's just not enough
size flat is relative.
Size is relative for sure. And then if you go out in like the, you know, more west, we're just small farm.
Yeah. But
how has this idea of enough related to how you have built your own farm?
Well, it's a really interesting question. I mean, I think a lot of the reasons that drove me towards the farm in the first place were about wanting to touch that absolute origin point. And I think in some ways that came from scarcity in some ways, just within the context of this conversation. But it also came from wanting to really be fully connected and to have that experience and to understand it, that I wanted to raise my food from birth to death all the way and to be involved in that process, to steward that process and to see what it brought up for me and what it brought up in me, and both in terms of curiosity about my own inner terrain, but also in a sort of greater context of wanting to explore what it is to be made out of those places and relationships that are most close to us. And I do think that wanting the farm was in many ways wanting more, but I think that there is a deep enough like satisfaction to me of this act of tending and of stewarding. I think it gives me a real sense of where I am in the world. And when we're talking about largesse and we're talking about overwhelm, to have a sense of place that feels very rooted and a sense of purpose within that place, even if that purpose is just as simple as 2 times a day, there are mouths that depend on me and it means something to them when I toss out those bales of hay or when I bring them their feed in the coop. And it gives me a sense of routine that makes me feel it's deliciously and wonderfully mundane. And so in speaking some about enough, one thing that I've been thinking a lot about is the mundane and the ordinary in a world that is so extraordinary, right? The way in which we have girdled and built this built world. It is extraordinary. It's the double-sided coin of awe and horror, both. And I think in a world of technology that is amazing, it's absolutely incredible. And in a world that is obsessed with superheroes, I want to know what it is to absolutely revel in the ordinary and to find myself going to sleep at night the most excited to toss a bale of hay out of a hayloft and make my cup of coffee for that morning, which I don't think anything could be more ordinary. And yet I still go to sleep excited about it. And so there is this act of, for me, reveling in the mundane, in the ordinary. I don't know if that answered your question.
I think so. There's two different things. There's two completely different paths that I'm trying to say.
Those are always the hardest. This is the hardest thing about podcasting. When you know, once you take a path, like it's going to be hard to get back to that other one. Yeah.
What do you think drives this fascination with the extraordinary? Because I think we've built a world that feels to me like if something isn't extraordinary, it shouldn't be worth my time.
I think that's a really interesting question. I don't know if I have an answer. I think, you know, my first thought when you said it, and I don't know if this will be an answer, and I'm curious what you think, was I think in our drive for curiosity and one of the things that is interesting about being human is to look up at the stars and to wonder what they might be made out of. And to see that they feel extraordinary to us, right? Or to have the sunrise and the sunset every day and to wonder why and what are the machinations of the universe that allow this thing that is both ordinary and extraordinary to happen. Extraordinary in that it heats us and it keeps us warm and it helps our food grow and to wonder these things. And I think that initially, you know, that curiosity led us down all of these different paths. And as right. they've gotten bigger, I think we've gotten wrapped up more in the extraordinariness that we can build and achieve. I always think about this with the race to space, right? That we put so much monetary investment and intellectual investment and thought investment into the idea of Mars. And yet we understand very little about our oceans or what's inside of our soil. And so I don't quite know what that drive towards extraordinary is, but I also think it's the way that we view extraordinary, right? They're the cultural mores that shape extraordinary, that space becomes extraordinary and soil does not. There's a lot of history that led to this point where that's the case. But I'm curious what you think.
I would agree with what you said. I think there's this part of us that maybe ego, maybe a different part of us that has this drive to feel important. And if we can do something that hasn't been done before, or that few people have done before, or in a way that it hasn't been done before, there's a significance that we might attach to ourselves because of that. Like, if I do this thing that no one else has done, or if we as a country do this thing that no one else has done, there's an importance to that, or it proves something. And so going back to, so like full circle to the idea of enough, I think that there may be, like for me at times, inner work that I need to do to realize that it is cool to do unique things. And I love doing unique things and building unique things and expressing in a way that maybe no one has expressed a certain idea or thought, but that my inherent value is not driven from those things. And I think if we can distinguish between those two things, we find ourselves in a place where we're operating to create amazing things, not out of lack, but out of giving. And like, how can I use what I've accumulated to give back?
I love that. I love that, to find a place of reciprocity, which I think is perhaps as natural of a state of being human as maybe. And I think that this is a question that sort of ego driven striving for something new.
Yeah, completely agree. I think it is. I don't think there's a clear answer to that. I just think that that's kind of surface level what I think, but it's another one of those I kind of want to take back and dig a little deeper on and see what might be, like, go back to my daughter and ask, you know, 5 whys or 10 whys and see where it leads.
I think you ought to ask her that question too, because I think that that's one of those beautiful things of childhood, right? Like, that hasn't been, those answers haven't been shaped in us in the same way. We don't have those same boundaries that we've accumulated in adulthood.
I don't know why I don't do that more. The minute you said that, I was like, I should do that all the time. I've got this awesome opportunity to see things in a way, like you said, that's completely unblemished by the way that the world is set up around us. And so I think that's something that I need to incorporate a lot more often.
Yeah. I'm going to take that question with me and noodle on it too. I think that's going to percolate for a little bit.
Yeah. Kate, what is it that, like, because your interests are so broad, you have so many things that you're doing. You've got the butcher shop, you've got the farm, you've got the podcast. You're making a difference in a lot of different areas. Is there like a specific underlying driver for all of these things for you?
I think for me, it's a lot of actually what we've touched on in this podcast. It is a blend of curiosity and a deep desire to find connection, with my environment and in all these different kinds of ways. I think those, whether it's my community, whether it's the ecosystem that I'm a part of, or my food or my neighbors, it's just a drive for connection coupled with deep curiosity.
Do you feel like you, and I think the answer is yes, but I'm curious how do you sort of interpret this in within yourself? Would be like, do you feel like you've made progress? And if so, how do you recognize that within yourself on sort of finding your place?
I'm fascinated by the word progress. I have a friend that we spend a lot of time talking about progress,
term,
like progress to where are we going? Yeah, where do we think we're going when we're progressing?
You're right. It's a very relative word.
You know, I've been thinking about something lately, and I've been thinking about the idea of healing. I think that a lot of us have this idea that we are searching for progress in our emotional or our physical healing. And I think that we seek this in land management and ecosystem health too. But I think that the ways in which things are fractured and broken, that they can become a part of that landscape, that inner terrain, that outer landscape, you know, and there will be these disconnection points. And I think that striving for progress, for perfection, for being fully, totally healed, is really interesting. And so I think that I've just started to scratch the surface of what it might mean to look at those things through a different lens, and certainly to look at myself through a different lens of that I am a part of a fabric of something. And, you know, I am little fractures and bits of skin that have healed over and are different for it. They're not better. They're not worse. They're just different, and allowing myself to be something that isn't necessarily in progress, but is in relationship, or is in creation, or is in not going somewhere. I hope I'm just sort of growing in more in some ways.
Yeah. I really appreciate that distinction, because I think that's a trap for me a lot of times. I kind of hinted at that.
Oh, it's
earlier,
a trap for all of us.
Yeah. This idea of like, what is progress with my healing, with my growth, with how I fit into the fabric of this planet. Like, mm-hmm. Progress is not the right word for us to be focusing in on that thing, because the destination is not fixed.
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And there isn't necessarily a destination. Yeah. I think
that,
you know,
I
think
that
in enough and in now, why do we have to go somewhere? Yes. And this is very much to the credit of conversations that I have with my friend James, but, I think.
Thanks, James.
Yeah. Thanks, James. Thanks, James. Yeah. I don't know. Yeah. Me too. Always making me think. I do think that there is this sort of interest in how do I just dig in deeper instead of look to where I might be going. Yeah.
Yeah. Mm. I think that that's a great place to sort of put a cap on today's episode. And Kate, I just want to thank you, because I really loved this conversation. Not at all where I expected us to go today, but I absolutely love where it went, because I think the way that the broadness and the interconnectedness with which you view the world was very helpful for me and how I process the world. It gave me a lot of new perspective. So thank you so much.
Oh my gosh. Thank you. You were so present to just the conversation that was here. This is something I always think about on podcast. You can have all the best laid plans in the world, and sometimes the conversation that shows up in those moments, and it can be hard to see it sometimes. And I know I miss it sometimes, and I know I see it sometimes. And I think we were just here together, and I thoroughly enjoyed the way that you interviewed, and I appreciate you for seeing me and where I was in these moments, and letting whatever you had planned go the wayside. But I feel bad if we didn't touch on some more of the regenerative agriculture side of things.
That's all right. I think if we want to, we could always have another conversation more specifically to that. But I think, as you said, this was what was here today. And I think it's important that comes out. And I think that will resonate with people as well. Kate, I'd love for you to share, if people want to follow you, if they want to get in touch with you, where's the best place to do that?
Yeah. So you can listen to the podcast. I mean, that's the first thing I like to tell people: Mind, Body, and Soil. You can find it wherever you listen to podcasts. We're having all of these conversations and more. You can find me mostly on Instagram at Kate, K-A-T-E underscore Kavanaugh, K-A-V-A-N-A-U-G-H. And you can also reach out to me through the podcast. There's links to my email and things like that. And I encourage everybody to reach out. I think that part of this for me is seeking connection and not just speaking into the void. And so I encourage everybody to reach out if something resonates or if you have a question.
Lovely. Okay. Thank you again for your time today and for this beautiful conversation. And I hope we'll talk again soon.
Oh, Brett, thank you. Thank you. I really mean it. It was a fantastic interview and I'm very appreciative.
Me too. All right. We'll talk soon. Thanks. Bye. And that's a wrap on my conversation with Kate Kavanaugh. Thank you for tuning in to the Impact Code and my deepest gratitude to Tower Community Bank for continuing to sponsor and put on this show. If you did enjoy this episode, be sure to go over to www.towercommunitybank.com and check us out. It's a great way to support the continued success of the podcast. A huge thank you to Kate Kavanaugh for joining today and sharing so much wisdom on a huge variety of topics. I know I loved this conversation and it left me just really fulfilled. And I hope that you all felt the same way. If Kate's message resonated with you, don't forget to check her out as well on Instagram. Her profile will be linked in the show notes. And you can also, and you must check out her podcast, Mind, Body, and Soil. Lastly, if today's show resonated with you, don't forget to subscribe and to share this episode with maybe a friend that you think might enjoy it. It's through your engagement in that process that we can continue to spread impactful stories and ideas just like we did today. I want to thank you for taking the time to listen to today's episode. Keep making your difference, and we'll see you here again for the next episode of The Impact Code. Bye.